This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, the business station. This is Cruise Control, the car show here on BFM 89.9. My name is Rich Bradbury. I'm joined in the studio today by Daniel Fernandez from DSF.my. Say hello, Daniel.
Hello, Mr. Bradbury.
No, Mr. Arif Ruz today. We will be bereft of him, so we'll be delivering news by ourselves today, Daniel. It's just me and you, mate.
I think it's going to be a fun show.
It should well be. So, of course, we'll be starting off with the news in just a couple of seconds. Our AT&T segment in a few minutes will be all about the lithium-ion battery and the recycling thereof. And then wrapping up with a car review of the Subaru Forester.
Yes.
So, before we get started, here is the news without Arif Ruz. Story number one, Daniel, the state of our taxis. So taxi companies, as we know, have been holding protests and heckling the PM last week,
okay,
demanding the banning of e-hailing services. The Deputy Transport Minister, Datuk Kamarudin Jaafar, has said there's no intention to ban them, but will be a level playing field, such as mandatory public service vehicle licenses, the PSVs, okay, and annual inspections to be implemented in stages going from January of next year. Why do you think our taxi drivers just don't want to kind of go along with this, and why can't we just compete?
You know, I actually like taxi drivers.
Okay, nothing wrong with that.
Yes, I tell you this, you know, I've never had a bad experience with a taxi driver. I've had maybe a so-so experience, but I've never had a really bad experience like a lot of people suggest.
Right.
And the thing is, I've actually had a not-so-good experience with ride-hailing drivers,
right,
also. So I think basically it's a human nature thing. Mm. Why a lot of taxi drivers, I think, are petitioning and picketing is simply because their business has really reduced, and also because there are some bad heads out there giving the taxi driver a really bad name.
Right.
And of course, you see, when you start losing your income, at some point, you become a bad head.
Yeah.
Because why? You're desperate.
Yeah.
It's not easy. In most countries, the taxis are subsidized. This country, the taxi is not exactly subsidized.
Right. Yeah.
It's actually quite expensive to run the taxi.
About 1,200 ringgit per month or something like
depending,
that. Depending. If you're renting one.
Yes. And what I have to say here is, think about it. Maybe you have not lived here long enough, Richard, but you know, I think Ali will understand this. In the good old days, if I wanted to be a taxi driver, I can't just go out there and get it to be a taxi driver. I have to go through a consortium.
Right. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
So basically, I'm working for someone before I work for myself.
Yeah.
As a Grab driver or Uber driver or My Car driver, any ride hailing, you can straight away be your own boss. Mm, mm. The app company takes a commission, yes, but they don't govern what you do and how you do it.
Mm.
But with a taxi driver, whether you work or not, you have to pay this guy some money every day.
Yeah.
Just like the KLIA limo.
Yeah, yeah.
If the guy doesn't go to work, he still has to pay some power that may be who's just collecting money sitting in his fat armchair.
Right.
So to me, I think these people, the owners of these consortiums, should be eliminated. Then the taxi drivers have a fair playing field.
I agree. And I think a lot of people have been saying that for a lot of years,
yes,
haven't they?
Yes, yes. But they never come out and say it.
Nobody's actually come out and said it.
Only on BFM.
Only on BFM. Now, you were right about how taxi drivers are losing a lot of money. I know even for one big London cab company, they've lost £18.1 million in the last year in lost revenue due to ride-hailing services.
Right.
They have as many problems as we do over here in Malaysia.
Right.
This is not an isolated issue.
Correct.
My question, though, is, you know, what do Malaysian taxi drivers need to do to regain public confidence?
I'll give the simplest example. For years, I've been traveling to Thailand for work.
Mm.
And every time I go there, you get to the airport, it's very simple. You go and buy a coupon, you get a taxi. And then once you get to your hotel, you know, anywhere you want to go, you just get a taxi. How come there, I'm getting taxi prices almost the same as ride-hailing prices? I get a polite taxi driver. I get a nice little Toyota Altis. I get taken to my destination without me needing to have, you know, ways to make sure that, you know, he's taking me the right way or wrong way. Because why? The governing organization, the governing body there, makes sure if a taxi driver does any hanky-panky, if you complain, immediately he's suspended for 30 days or whatever time. So as long as you got a good authority running this, you will not get all the hanky-panky and
right,
you will not get the bad heads.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it's been a big problem, hasn't it?
Right.
I've experienced problems both with normal taxis and with ride-hailing apps.
Yes.
People trying to overcharge me on both sides of the spectrum, taking the wrong way. And I think what they need to do to regain public confidence is, you know, just stand up and be respectable as individuals, you know. And like you say, it's not all taxi drivers that are bad. There's just one or two bad eggs.
Yes.
And once they've been eliminated, life is good and we can all move forward fairly, right? All right, story number two. One that's just come in very recently, in fact. Hot news. How the government has, and this is in air quotes, invited German car makers to participate in the third national car. So the Deputy Minister of International Trade and Industry, Ong-Kian Ming, has said German car companies were successful in assembling CKD vehicles in the past with a lot of local content. The German ambassador to Malaysia, Nicholas Graf Lomsdorf, has said four German manufacturers want to expand their business and increase production in Malaysia. So far, no proposals yet. What kind of collaboration do you think we're looking for? Production, design, tech?
Which German company is going to hand you all their R&D for a country with maybe a couple of hundred thousand sales?
Other than the BMW SUVs, are there many German manufacturers who are selling well here in Malaysia right now?
They're all doing really well, except for Audi, because Audi has moved out, running out of Singapore. But all the rest are doing well.
Right.
So why would they suddenly come to Malaysia and say, hey, here's everything.
Unless they've been given a carte blanche.
Well, again, how are they going to compete with Geely and Proton?
Right.
They can't, because they're not manufacturing out of China and they don't have local vendors that can supply the kind of parts that you require for this. You see, even though German car manufacturers have been assembling locally very well, but all the tricky components, I'll use the word tricky components, are still coming from the motherland.
Right, right. So do you think this is just a case of Ong-Kian Ming kind of waving his paper up in the air and saying, you know, please come if you want to.
I think they're just testing waters here.
Right.
Or maybe someone has misquoted him. Mm. I don't know. Because I wasn't there. I wasn't present when he said it. Now, and I would ask this question. Why would you ask Germans and not ask the Koreans and Japanese?
Right.
Because think about it. Toyota has been way ahead of the hybrid game even before the Germans.
Yeah.
And they're here with very strong support in both Perdua and Toyota. Mm. On top of that, they have facilities in Indonesia and Thailand doing huge manufacturing, parts, components, everything else. Why not talk to them? Honda has got a huge presence in hybrid cars.
Mm.
Why not talk to them?
Mm. All right. Mm. We've got story number three. Sim racing. You've done this before?
Yes.
Officially a motorsport in Germany now.
Yes.
The lines between sports and esports are blurring, of course. Germany's racing governing body, Deutsche Motorsportbund, has said there's little difference between real-world racing and sim racing.
Hmm.
I'm not so sure about that.
Yep, I'm not saying anything.
Sim racing helps in real-world driving situations. Lando Norris, a Formula 2 driver, says racing sims helped him hone his racing skills. Ford uses simulators to test out their road cars and NASCARs. GT Academy, the Gran Turismo Academy, turns sim racers into real racing drivers. Jan Mardenborough of GT Academy, now pro driver, may have its own e-racing series. Will it be as big as other e-sports?
Okay. All that, fine. But, you know, all that training online, does it teach you to park?
Right. This is a sport. You don't need to park in the sport.
Yeah, you need to park before you can get on the racetrack, don't you? No, I think it's all good. But, you know, it's a rich man's sport.
E-racing?
It's still a rich man's sport.
Is it?
Isn't there a
place at Subang that does this? You know,
how
for
much?
The simulators?
Yeah.
I don't know how much it is.
Even if you try the ones in the amusement parks, how long can you keep putting in coins ringgit a pop, just for a few minutes? It's not cheap.
Right.
You might as well buy one and put it in your house. And then when you put it in the house, what about the software upgrade?
Uh-huh.
And then you can get, of course, you can get a gaming console
with
the seed and everything else.
Yeah.
That's almost 15,000 ringgit.
Right.
And then
you
get
You sound
obsolete.
Like you've been researching into this.
I've been researching this for myself and my kids, but it's just not worth it.
It's just too expensive.
Well, you know, it's not only too expensive. We are married.
That's it, right. I see. All right, moving on to story number four, a sustainable life cycle for EV batteries. Interesting, because we'll be talking about that
stuff
in AT&T. BMW partnering with the battery manufacturer Northvolt and material tech company Umicore. Do you know any more about this?
Not really, but I know that they're spending a lot of money to try and figure out how to make this work in the long run. Because why? End of life is coming for a lot of first-generation hybrids. So we'll be talking about that later.
What they're talking about here is sustainable industrialization of battery cells from production to recycling, creating a recyclable battery design for use in cars. It can then be used as energy storage, a backup source of electricity for homes and appliances maybe.
Yes.
Then it can be completely recycled. BMW have said their raw materials come from environmentally responsible sources. And
what does that actually mean?
Right, exactly. And recycled materials to reduce the carbon footprint, something they're doing with the BMW i3, recycled materials used everywhere in the car, apparently.
Yes, yes. So the i3 is fully recyclable.
Right.
But there are a lot of other vehicle manufacturers also doing this. They're coming down that road.
Right.
But I've never seen a video or I've never been invited to see how they take apart and recycle all these bits. Mm. They say it's recyclable completely.
And it's not cheap, you know, to do that.
Exactly. It's not cheap. So, you know, you've got plastics and you've got even carbon fiber and aluminium and metal and everything. But I'm just trying to see, can you show me exactly how much? You say 98% of the car can be recycled. Mm. Can you tell me where the 98% goes and then can I see it? You know?
Right.
I'm old school. I want to see it.
I know what you mean. You want to know where, okay, if you're recycling that panel, where's that panel going to go?
Yes.
How do you melt it down? What happens to it and where does it go?
Yes.
I'm with you on that.
Okay.
Same age. Same age, yes. More about batteries on our AT&T segment in a couple of minutes. But before we get to that, new cars. Mm. You're going to have to help me out a little bit here.
Yes.
Global cars. The Polestar 1. Longest pure electric range in the world.
Yes.
Tell me about this.
Yes. Okay. Now, who owns Polestar?
Mm.
Who?
I'm asking.
You mean you don't know?
No, I don't.
Polestar is part of Volvo, part of Geely.
Oh, is it?
Yes.
Well, now I know, you see?
And then they also have another company called Link & Co.
Oh, yeah, I remember Link & Co. Oh, my word, yes, Link & Co. Here we go.
Okay.
Here we go.
Okay. So Polestar is going to go completely electric.
Right.
And they're going to production. They've started with their supercar.
Yeah.
And then they're going to move down the what they call food chain with other vehicles. But full electric, and they've got the range sorted out, and they've got also the way... they've not disclosed completely how to do quick charging, quick full charging. So this is going to be really exciting. And the price, they want to compete with Tesla.
Oh.
Yeah, so they're going to be very competitive globally. Whereas Tesla is just looking at one region, they want to go global.
Do we know what the range of the Polestar 1 is, roughly?
They've given some indication, but it's not confirmed yet.
Right.
And all this is still concept. Time. So we want to get confirmation before we share actual information.
All right. Speaking of which, Lincoln Co. 03, apparently it's your favorite car.
Yes.
Or favorite car brand, rather.
Yes.
Ah. Tell me more about this.
Lincoln Co. 03. I don't know what you're talking about.
Skip. How about the new Toyota Camry?
The new Toyota Camry.
Launching in Thailand next
week. Launching in Thailand next week. Now, this is an interesting car.
Are we going to get it here?
We're going to get it here.
Oh.
It might come as soon as December.
Oh, okay.
Maybe even late November.
Uh-huh.
Because once it comes to Thailand, same factory, same manufacturing, same design, everything. This car actually was launched globally earlier this year. But they had a few versions of it. So for the North American market, you get one version, which a lot of Malaysians thought, hey, that's the one coming to Malaysia because it's got a very aggressive nose design. But that's not the one coming to Malaysia, sadly. The one coming is the one for the ASEAN region, less aggressive. But this car is going to hit Honda Accord right in the bunny.
Which is what I was going to ask about next. What about the new Honda Accord then?
Now, the new Honda Accord, it's funny. They launched in America first, but Japan has not seen it yet. Mm. And then only it'll come to ASEAN. And we're looking at probably... middle to end of next year, which means Toyota have a head start and they can be laughing because why? Everybody who wants to upgrade next year, they'll be looking at this car.
The Honda Accord.
Yes.
Okay, folks, that was the news without Mr. Arif Ruz here on Cruise Control on BFM 89.9. Stick around, we have our AT&T segment coming up next, how the lithium ion battery actually never dies. Don't go anywhere, this is BFM 89.9, the business station. BFM 89.9, the business station. This is Cruise Control, the car show here on BFM 89.9. My name is Rich Bradbury, and I'm in the studio today with Daniel Fernandez from DSF.my. We've given you some news already. It's our AT&T segment up now, the lithium-ion battery that actually never dies. So what should Malaysians be doing right now?
Auto technology and tips brought to you by Volvo, made by Sweden.
Okay, I'm going to give a sneak peek into the future. for people who are looking at a new business.
You're rubbing your crystal ball.
I am rubbing my crystal ball. I would like to say two things for AT&T today. Why two things? Because I came up with this brilliant idea earlier today. But that's the end part of AT&T. For okay. now, lithium-ion batteries. Okay, a lot of cars with lithium-ion batteries are coming to end of life very soon. Yeah, you know, they're 6, 7, 8, 9 years already. Now, these batteries are going to be going out. Where will they go?
They'll end up in a scrapyard somewhere.
They could be, you know, I don't know, some guy will take it from the scrapyard and take it apart and try and sell bits and pieces and all that. But how much can you get out of it? Then there are bits and pieces which are not going to be used, which are just going to be thrown away. And then you're going to have a landfill, you know. Yeah. And, you know, I'm not saying we have a lot of these cars, but a lot of these cars have been sold. Mm. So if someone can come up with a very smart way in which, for example, there's a company in Sweden, they're called Box of Energy, okay? Now, this Box of Energy basically takes all these old lithium-ion batteries and they put it into a building, like an apartment block. Okay, they put it into a room in an apartment block. They run solar panels up, but they use the batteries to store for usage at night.
I see.
Okay, so the solar panels during the day will power up the apartment. But as the sun goes down, the batteries will store the remaining energy. And they can use some of it in the evening or later part of night. So you're saving on fuel costs. Then, of course, there's this company called Power Vault, which, you know, in UK is taking all the batteries and using them to power schools. And you have in Japan another company that's doing it for 7-Eleven stores. So, you know, you're running all the little machines and all that.
And
so,
these are all done by recycled batteries.
All done by recycled lithium-ion batteries. Now, why they're using it? Because in these countries, more cars were sold with lithium-ion batteries. So more of these batteries are coming to the market and they're starting to use them. I mean, hybrid and plug-in hybrid cars were already running in these countries even before Malaysia. Mm. So especially like Japan, they've had so many. They have taxis. They have so many vehicles running on this. They even have trucks. They even have forklifts, little cranes, you know, things in the city.
Yeah.
Now, all these batteries, instead of throwing it away, these companies have come up with interesting ideas on how to use it for storage devices. Now, a few months ago, I actually wanted to install solar panels in my house. So I spoke to a company and they came and gave me a code and everything else, you know, which you are facing and everything else. They said, okay, you got two ways of looking at it. You can actually take just for solar panels, which is one price, which is not too cheap. And you get power free during the day or when the sun is up. But as the sun goes down 3, 4 p.m. or in the early part of the morning, you don't get any sun. You have to run your normal electricity. So I said, what if I wanted complete solar power? They said, okay, you have to buy a battery system. The battery system is as expensive as the solar panels.
Right.
So it didn't make any sense because my return on investment will take 15, 20 years.
Yeah.
By then I'll be dead and my children will be enjoying it.
Yeah.
No, thank you. Mm. You know, I want to enjoy it right now. Yeah, I enjoy the savings right now. So I said, you know, what kind of battery? They said, oh, you know, this kind of battery. They tried to explain to me. They thought I'm a little bit of a dum-dum. I said, never mind. Then I thought about it and I read this and I said, this is the perfect idea. If I could get my hands on some old lithium-ion batteries, I could store the energy during the day. At night, just run it through.
Yeah.
And it'll work perfectly. So basically, I might even end up getting free power 24 hours a day.
Yeah. It's funny you should say that because that's exactly what we did with my mother's house a few years ago. She has a battery storage system and solar panels on the roof. A few years ago, there was a government initiative to try and move as many people over to solar power as possible. Okay. I mean, she's in the north of England. It's not the sunniest of places all the time.
True.
But over time, these batteries store up. And she was making enough electricity that she ended up selling some of it back to the national grid.
Okay. And where did you get the batteries from?
The batteries were installed by the same company who installed the solar panels.
So you got new batteries?
Brand new batteries,
okay. Yeah. But here we're talking about recycling old lithium-ion batteries.
Which you could find all over the place.
Exactly. So I think somebody should do this business and make the money. So, you know, I see Ali sitting around quietly in the corner playing with his phone. I don't think he's playing with his phone. He's actually writing out a proposal now.
He's doing a business
to do this business.
Yeah.
And I wish him all the luck. Yeah. You know?
But that's a great idea. I mean, if nobody is picking up on this, it makes perfect sense.
Yes.
There's all these batteries lying around and there's only going
to
be more.
Yes. And you can talk to the car manufacturers and say, listen, you've got these old batteries coming in for exchange.
Yeah.
I will buy them off you for a reasonable price. I'll clean them up, get them sorted out.
Yeah.
And I will start packaging them in little, you know, containers or whatever.
Right.
And I will partner up with a solar panel company and say, this is what I can offer you. if it came to me at a reasonable price, like say 2,000 or 3,000 ringgit, I would have said, yes, give me the batteries.
Well, why even stop it there? I mean, you take a little bit further and you've got old handphone batteries that you could use. The old batteries that people use in their vape machines or whatever they're
called. But they're too small. That's
but
the problem.
Together in large together, numbers.
Yes. Together, yes. Know. But it's so much easier to just get the ones from the cars because they're big, they're square, they're boxy. They'll fit nicely in a compartment and you can actually join them all together much easier.
Right, right.
Yeah. What if
yeah.
we could use our smartphone to pay our toll charges?
Oh, here we go. Yes. You're being sneaky now. You, this is not under you. You sneak that in.
I sneak that in.
Yeah.
But I'm just thinking, just think about it. If you now forget about smart tags, forget about RFID chips and everything else, what if you could just go to the toll and just take out your phone and just tap it and go?
Okay. Well, there are companies now that allow you to do that with their e-wallets and stuff, aren't they? It should be the same
Should be the same.
Yeah.
Then you don't have to buy a smart tag.
Yeah.
And I came up with this idea because today there was this press conference on, you know, the MyTag and everything else. They want to revive it and the company is coming in together with a new technology and they still can use your smart tag and everything else. Why bother with all these devices and the battery and everything else? Just carry it in your phone.
We're at the point where everybody has a smartphone.
Yes, yes.
You better write that down, Daniel.
Yeah, that's another business idea for Ali.
For Ali, he's writing that down too.
This segment was brought to you by Volvo. Inspiring technology, shaping tomorrow's mobility.
All right, that of course was our AT&T segment about the lithium-ion battery that actually never dies, and of course the smart tag on your smartphone.
Yes, sir.
All right, coming up next, it is our car review. I've been waiting for this one. The Subaru Forester.
Yes.
Tell me all about it.
I'm going to tell you so much about it that you're going to be shocked. Now, Subaru Forester. This car came out middle of this year.
Yeah.
Okay. We test drove it. We enjoyed it. You know, we did a little bit of off-road excursion. But you know, why I want to bring it up now is simply because the price has become so attractive. The high-spec Forester, I'm going to jump the gun before you do.
Go on
the 7 point.
7 point check.
7 point check. Yeah. You know, I'm even getting.
Oh, sorry. 8 point inspection today.
Today's 8 point.
Yes,
okay.
Yes.
Okay. $123,000. So why am I bringing it up early?
That's not bad at all.
Oh, no, yes. Local assembled, 2-liter, all-wheel drive, 123,000. Why I'm bringing this up is because in the next few weeks, we're going to hear about the Proton X70 SUV.
Yeah.
Now, that's going to be around the same price as this vehicle.
But it's only two-wheel drive.
Two-wheel drive, yes. And then this is Subaru. Tried, tested, brand name, globally known, service centers, after sales, everything spot on. I'm not saying the Proton X70 is going to be less equipped or less quality or anything else. But if you talk about Malaysian mentality now, if you talk to the average Malaysian, I want to buy a SUV. You give me now a Proton X70. Yes, partnership with China, fantastic technology. They've got their act together. They've got partnership with Geely. They've got partnership with Volvo. Everything is there. So you got a high quality car. Yes, that made in China tag is not so detrimental anymore. People have started accepting it and they will be happy to buy it. Then you've got Subaru.
Hang on. The Subaru is how much?
123,000.
And the XC70 is roughly going to be?
That price.
It's going to
be around that, yes.
It's a no-brainer.
Exactly. And you know, Proton tell me they've already got about 8,000 interested bookings on the car. But you know, bookings, people normally, they can change their mind later. So you take about, say, 70% success rate.
Yeah.
So you have about 6,000 people who are saying, I want to buy a Proton X70 today. We don't know what's going to happen in a month's time. But the same people, if I show them the Subaru Forester, they might say, hey, Subaru Forester, 123,000, all-wheel drive, SUV, tried and tested, boleh tahan. And then if you drive this vehicle, if you take it out, number one, a lot of people will say, oh, I'm never going to use that all-wheel drive system. It's very, oh, technology, wonderful. I'm not going to use it. Yes. True, you're not going to go off-road with it. But the beauty about this all-wheel drive system is, especially the Subaru one, when you're driving around, you're just cruising around, it's fine. Suddenly you think you want to get a little bit excited on the road and you go around a corner and it starts raining or there's mud or anything else, that all-wheel drive system is there to save you because not everyone out there is an ace driver like me.
Right.
You know?
And modest. And is modest, yeah.
Not everyone out there knows how to handle a front-wheel drive car or a rear-wheel drive car in the wrong situation.
Right.
Okay? We do make mistakes. But with an all-wheel drive car, I'm not saying you will not make a mistake, but the chances of you taking it out of control, a lot less. Especially with this new chassis. This new platform on the Subaru Forester is spot on. It's stiff, it feels rigid, and it feels like a quality vehicle. And the good thing about Subaru, no matter what anyone tells you, this car, the DNA of this car, they've always been a SUV company. They've always had all-wheel drive.
Right.
They've always had the boxer engine.
Yeah.
You know, which is their mantra. You know, you don't mess with Subaru because you know why? They got all-wheel drive, they got boxer engine.
Mm.
2 liter, it may not be the most powerful engine in its class, but people who buy these cars are not thinking about going around a corner at extremely fast speeds or doing, 180, 200 kilometers an hour on the highway. You can get there, but it's not designed for you to do that all the time. It's designed for you to take your family out, be comfortable. If you need to go off-road, you can go off-road. If you need to go into an area where you've just had a little bit of flooding, this car will be sorting you out.
Right,
no problem.
Right.
Now, the other thing I also want to bring out about this car, which I find actually quite strange, is I travel to Borneo quite often and I see pickup trucks everywhere.
Everywhere, yes.
Everywhere. But Borneo used to be known for, totally rugged. But there's the Pan Borneo Highway being constructed. There are roads everywhere. Not everyone is going severe off-roading. Even if you live in a longhouse, you're not actually going into severe off-road situations. You're going into a little bit of light off-roading. So why not consider something from Subaru against a pickup truck? I know the pickup truck is good, but the pickup truck also has its limitations. If you're my age, 50 plus, and you've had a bad back, getting in and out of a pickup truck, not your greatest fancy. That's number one. Number two, the rear seat comfort. I've never found a pickup truck to have the rear seat comfort of a car, of a passenger car. So if you're driving a Subaru like this, instead of a pickup truck, suddenly you'll start seeing, rear passengers are much more comfortable. You can go longer distance. And you still got the off-road facility to take
should,
on the
should
rough.
You need it.
And at 123,000 ringgit, this is priced very close to a pickup truck.
What's the interior like then?
I would say it's somewhere in between a premium Japanese car and a not so premium European car.
I get you.
Somewhere in between.
Yeah, yeah. So,
and for that price, I think they've done a pretty good job.
Mm.
Space, plenty. Three at the back, no issue.
Mm.
And Subaru, safety features, top notch. What comes, I think, as an added advantage is the fact that, you got that Subaru name. Fuji Heavy Industries, they know how to make cars. They don't have factories around the world. And if you go and Google Subaru, in US, the amount of reaction you get, and it's all positive. You don't see people talking bad about Subaru.
Mm.
You don't see people saying, I hate my Subaru. You don't see people saying, Subaru didn't do this, didn't do that. They all use Subarus. And then if you come closer to home, Australia and New Zealand, they love their Subarus. And they go off-road all the time.
Do you see any faults with it?
It's a four-wheel drive. Fuel consumption will be a bit higher.
Mm.
Anything four-wheel drive, you'll definitely have a slightly higher fuel consumption. Mm. And then it's not sitting as high as an SUV, even though it's an SUV, because it's somewhere between like a wagon and an SUV.
Right.
But when you park it side by side, it's almost the same height. It's just that the on-road height is not as high as some of these other SUVs.
All right.
Which I think is a good thing so that you can go around corners a bit faster.
Okay. 8-point inspection?
Yes, sir.
We're ready for that?
Yes.
Who's the car for?
I would say this car is actually really good for women with families.
Women with families?
Yes, women with families. I'm not talking about single women. I say women with families. I mean, even men as well. But, men tend to say, this car doesn't look aggressive enough. But, again, it can go both ways. Why I say with families? Because it's a great family vehicle because of the space and the safety features and the fact that you can put a lot of stuff in the back.
Okay. So number two, who are its competitors and how does it stack up against them?
Ooh, plenty.
It's a crowded segment. The CX-5.
CX-5.
CRV.
CRV. You've got the Hyundai Tucson.
And the Kia Sportage.
Kia Sportage.
Ah.
You've got the Peugeot 3008, which is priced a little bit more only. And then you've got, of course, the new Proton X70, which is coming out. And then you've got, I find this surprising because it's almost identical to the BMW X1.
Mm.
And yet, it's so much cheaper than the X1.
Right.
It's almost identical to the Mercedes GLA, but it's so much cheaper than the GLA. It's bigger than the Audi Q3. It's better equipped than the Volkswagen Tiguan. And yet, it's cheaper and better built. So, in a lot of ways, this car at 123, very hard to ignore it.
How does it drive? What's the ride like, the handling, the engine, the build quality? It's Subaru.
I like what Subaru in Malaysia have done. They've actually put quite fat tires on it. I would say fat tires because, a lot of people like to put low-profile tires and get this really stylish look.
Yeah.
But if you don't put very low-profile tires, you actually get a very good ride comfort simply because, let's face it, our roads are not ripple-free.
They're awful.
Yes, especially around PJ.
Mm.
And if you go down to KL, you've got the cobblestones and everything else. If you have this slightly fatter tires, you get really good ride comfort. And you see, like BMW, for example, they have run flat tires, which are not very comfortable. Then you got a lot of the Japanese who go for lower profile tires because they want to give that really sporty look. Nice. But again, the ride comfort is not as good as something like this.
All right. Is it well equipped?
Very well equipped.
How? What might annoy you in this car?
Okay. The one thing that might annoy me is if I'm looking straight at it. If I'm standing outside and looking straight at it, I don't like the nose of this car.
Ah.
You know, I like the side view. I like the rear view.
What's wrong with
the nose?
I
just don't like the nose. It's a personal thing.
It's a personal thing.
I think there's a bit too much chrome on the nose. But you see, I'm not a chrome person. You know, if I were to buy this car, I'll actually de-chrome it. And then I'll think it's a really handsome looking, you know, car, rugged looking car.
All right. How is the car priced and what's the warranty and after sales like?
Okay. Warranty and after sales, top notch.
Uh-huh.
Pricing 123,000 for this vehicle for a 2-liter all-wheel drive full spec car. Can it go wrong?
Not bad at all, is it?
Not bad at all.
Final question: would you consider this car over the others that we mentioned?
It'll be very hard because you see, again, styling. I'm happy with the styling. I just don't like the chrome on the nose. So, if the salesman said, "Hey, brother, I will de-chrome it for you for free." Done deal. So
done deal.
Yes.
Right. That was our car review of the Subaru Forester here on Cruise Control. Ladies and gentlemen, we have come to the end of the show. If you missed anything this week, we started about the state of our taxis in this country, sim racing as a motorsport, and sustainable EV batteries in our news segment. In our AT&T segment, we spoke about lithium ion battery recycling and some upcycling we could do with that. Of course, we finished up with the car review of the Subaru Forester, priced at $123,000. Not too bad at all.
Yep.
That was the car show. Of course, Cruise Control here on BFM 89.9 with me, Rich Bradbury, and of course, Daniel Fernandez from DSF.my.
And how do you find us on Instagram?
You can head over to BFM Cruise Control over on Instagram. It's right
there. Fantastic.
There you go. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.